Welcome to the show. Here's just a little reminder to rate the podcast on Spotify or Apple podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast. And don't forget that you can always join us in our membership community, Mighty Networks. It's called Biohacking Menopause. The links to grab that in space in there is in the show notes. So we had such an amazing conversation with Dr. Heather Hirsch. She clears a lot of the confusion on hormone therapy and cancer risk and testing. We covered those as well. We covered some common questions that women ask about menopause. And we talked quite a bit about the politicalization and the emotions that go with menopause and in this menopause space. And we talked a lot about the Lancet article, which just came out, and it's been causing a lot of roar in this space. And she gives a really, really clear understanding of what that article was all about, even though it's, I think it's 64 pages long. She read it through it, and she has a really great opinion on it. And by the end of this podcast, you will feel more empowered. You will feel more informed. You'll know how to approach your own doctor with your questions on menopause. And to give you a little background on Dr. Heather Hirsch, she's a certified internist practicing private telemedicine. And she also has her, her own practice. She's the founder of the Menopause and Midlife Clinic at the Brigham and Women's Hospital. She served on the faculty at Harvard Medical School. She's board certified in internal medicine and has advanced fellowship training in women's health at the Cleveland Clinic. These are all huge places. These are have really, really great training. She specializes in menopausal hormone therapy, breast cancer survivorship, sexual dysfunction, bone health. She covers it all. So many other conditions that she covers that women experience in midlife. Not that you're going to experience all of these, but some of these you may. She's an active and contributing member of the Menopause Society, formerly known as NAMS, N-A-M-S, or the North American Menopause Society. They just rebranded. And she's also contributing member at the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. She also serves on the Medical Advisory Board of Meaty Health, which is the first digital platform designed for women's unique needs in midlife. So you can see she is super qualified for this discussion today. And if you like what you hear and want to know more, she can actually see you in a private telemedicine practice. And you can book visits with her directly at heatherhirschmd.com. I'll have links to that. But she also now has trained a lot of other doctors through her method. So sometimes you may see she's a little untouchable, or maybe she's too busy, or you can go and try to get one of her other trained practitioners as well. And you may have already heard of Dr. Hirsch because she's been on Oprah, NPR, and has been featured in some major media like Women's Health and Style and Forbes. So you're going to love her, and I can't wait for you to listen in right now. You are now listening to the Hack My Age podcast, the show that brings you guests for the woman going through the menopause journey. I'm your host, Zora Benamou, a gerontologist, certified sports nutrition, menopause, and breathing coach. I'm the author of the Longevity Master Plan and the cookbook Eating for Longevity. And if you're a woman in perimenopause or postmenopause, check out the programs on the hackmyage.com website to biohack and optimize your menopause experience, because menopause is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So now please head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review to help others find us too. This is a really important point because it costs nothing, but makes a huge impact for me to support a podcast for menopausal women to normalize this conversation about menopause and attract even more amazing guests to the show for you and for me. Hey there, biohacking besties. If you're navigating perimenopause or just dealing with those pesky menopause symptoms like hot flashes, fatigue, unexplained weight gain, you're not alone. I get it. The struggles with belly fat, crappy sleep, a racing mind, thinning hair, and that all too familiar feeling of anxiety or mood swings. Or maybe you've just experienced those mysterious symptoms like phantom smells, itchy skin, and achy joints. And these are all signs that you may be heading into the menopause transition. Yep, even if you're only 40. And it's not even rare to have these symptoms in your 30s, so just be aware. But here's the scoop. Menopause may be inevitable, but suffering is completely optional. You don't have to just tough it out because it's a natural process that women have endured for centuries. Yes, it's natural, but no, you don't have to tolerate the pain anymore. And that's why I've created specialized menopause biohacking programs just for you. This is not the usual recommendations like get a fan and dress in layers. We are talking about biohacks, which go beyond what most people even heard of to treat menopause symptoms. So head over to the hackmyage.com website and snag the Hot Flash program or the Energy Reboot program to hack your fatigue and optimize your menopause transition. And whether you preferred self-guided, affordable masterclasses or fully guided programs with a supportive community of women and me who are facing similar challenges, we have got you covered. Every Saturday of the month, we start a new cohort of women. You get an exclusive 10% off any program with the code HACKMYAGE. So got to act fast, especially if you want a spot in the guided program, because we keep it intimate with a maximum of 20 women to give you the attention you deserve. So don't let menopause dictate your journey. Let's conquer it together and head over to the HACKMYAGE website now and start biohacking menopause. Okay, well, it's a real pleasure and honor to have Dr. Heather Hirsch with us today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited for this opportunity.
We have so much to cover. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we'll try our best to get through as much as we possibly can. I'm thinking I got to add this. We were just having this discussion about the Lancet article that came out. I listened to your podcast on it, and I don't want to forget to cover that, just, you know, because it's quite important. But before we do, let's start some basics. Let's just get to the sort of common questions that women ask about menopause. And I want you to bust some myths as we go along as well. So let's hear your take on what is menopause? And people are very confused about all the little terminology that goes around it.
I know. Well, thank you so much for having me on. This has been long overdue, and I am so excited to meet your audience. So hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And so, you know, we throw around these terms all the time, and even I will say menopause or, you know, menopause transition, and it's easy to just kind of roll those into what you're saying. Menopause by the textbook is 12 months of no period, 12 months of no period.
Consecutive months, right?
Yes, 12 consecutive months. So even if you get to 8 months, 9 months, technically, again, by the textbook, I always say most, if not all women don't really follow the textbook, but 12 months of no period. Now, some women don't get periods. They've had a hysterectomy or they have some type of birth control that prevents them from getting periods. So we'll come back to that in a second, because you might be saying, well, how am I going to calculate if I don't get a period? And that 1 year anniversary is menopause. It is menopause. It's a thing instead of a stage. And then from that day on, you're always considered postmenopausal. And once postmenopausal, you're always postmenopausal. So then you're really into the postmenopausal years. Perimenopause is the time leading up to menopause. So all the days up until that 1 year anniversary. And then we use the term menopause transition broadly to define this sort of entire spectrum from the beginning of changes in menstrual cycle and, you know, beginning of symptoms that start in perimenopause all the way through postmenopausal years.
Perfect. Great. I hope it's all very clear. Like, that's in the basics. And then we have all these little nuances in between. But I get a lot of women still calling perimenopause and premenopause the same thing. And I just want to make sure that they understand that there's a big difference. So the biggest question and the confusion that I have, in at least in my community, is about hormone therapy, right? It's so controversial too. And the biggest controversy, the biggest concern that women have that in my community is they come up to me and they ask about cancer risk. So what are your thoughts on cancer risk and hormone therapy?
So we now know that the biggest fear, which was actually the risk of breast cancer, because let's actually put breast cancer on a table for a second. The Women's Health Initiative, which was the study that actually caused this fear, that came out more than two decades ago in 2022, actually showed 2002, actually showed a statistically significant reduction in colon cancer, which is the third leading cause of cancer death, and reduction in death of all cancers. But this got lost in the news. You might be like, there's no way that's true. That is not even arguable. It's not opinion. That actually showed reduction in death from all cancers in women who took hormone therapy. Now, the breast cancer risk, of course, is the one that stands out because breasts are emotional. And the risk was 2 to 4 women out of 1,000 women over 5 years who took oral Prempro. Okay, I'll say that one more time. 2 to 4 women out of 1,000 over 5 years who took oral Prempro. Now, that's actually quite similar to baseline risk, and it's not statistically significant. But the key here is that that was on oral Prempro. And most formulations now are different. We're using a bioidentical estradiol, which just means it's plant-based. It doesn't mean it's compounded. There's FDA-approved estradiol and FDA-approved bioidentical progesterone called Prometrium, which has not been shown to increase the risk of breast cancer. So when I say that, and I say there's reductions in colon cancer, reduction in death from all cancers on hormone therapy, and no increased risk of breast cancer on the formulation of estradiol and Prometrium or micronized natural progesterone, we pretty much take that off the table. It is just so hard to be like, there's no way that can be true. But these are not opinions. These are facts.
And it depends on how people twist the statistics too. And this is why if you want to really look at statistics and understand it, I always recommend Dr. Avon Blooming's book, Estrogen Matters. And Carol Tavris as well. So yeah, if you want to get into the statistics and the significance, that's the one you want to go to. But I was just looking through the Lancet article, and I remember they threw a stat out the very beginning. Yes. It was, and it scares you because it says, I have it here right in front of me. What was it?
1 in 50?
1 in 50 women, I think what it was. And so then you go, well, where are they getting their stats from? For every 50 women taking systemic combined MHT, menopause hormone therapy, from age 50 years. MHT is the most effective treatment for vasomotor symptoms, but it is not without risk. Robust epidemiological evidence suggests that one additional case of breast cancer will occur for every 50 women taking systemic combined menopause hormone therapy from age 50 years, and 1 in 70 for estrogen only MHT. Like, so when you throw a statistic like that, that confuses the women. And so who are they, how are they supposed to interpret this, and who are they supposed to believe?
You know, I actually am actually just even flipping through the Lancet because I want to see where is the reference for that, because
that's what I was looking at as well.
I know we're all doing this in real time. That doesn't make contextual sense. I actually think potentially what they're doing here is they're taking absolute risk instead of relative risk. So let's talk about this, and then later we'll go back and we'll find the references for this. A relative risk, when the Women's Health study came out, they reported a 26% increased risk in invasive breast cancer on women who took hormone therapy. But relative risk is very tricky because it depends on how many women are in the population, because that relative risk of 1.26 turned out to be a risk of 2 to 4 women out of 1,000 over 5 years. So absolute risk, is different than relative risk. An absolute risk always makes things look a lot worse. And that's because they're not thinking about, or they're not fully incorporating and contextualizing the population. I would wonder if those numbers are not a little bit slanted and that these are not actually absolute risk instead of relative risk. Relative risk is actually what it actually means. Absolute risk, we heard a lot of absolute risk during the pandemic. The risk of COVID in this county is now, 41%, 31%. But we all knew it didn't mean that 40% of people were getting COVID. It has to be contextualized in that population. And so that's one more common or recent experience that most of us have had with the difference between absolute risk and relative risk.
Thank you. And when we put into context the risk for breast cancer when you are obese, when you are smoking, when you are drinking alcohol abuse, all these things, well, that's a risk. That's a real risk. And if you read Estrogen Matters, you have a higher risk of getting breast cancer if you're a Swedish flight attendant rather than taking hormone therapy. So it's you know, people have to put this into context.
Exactly. The numbers are really quite twisted in the fact that the risk of breast cancer is higher for women who, let's say, smoke or who have obesity, diabetes, hypertension, but they don't walk around every day thinking, oh my gosh, this is giving me breast cancer. But you put two emotional things together, hormones and breasts, right? And you have a synergistic emotional response. And it's really hard to get back to the logic. I mean, and I say this to my patients all the time because they'll come in and they'll say, Dr. Hirsch, I really wanted to take hormone therapy. I totally hear the logic, but, you know, I saw my aunt go through it and like, just walk me through it. And, you know, it is really, you have to kind of think to yourself as you're either talking to a friend or talking to a stranger on Instagram, or you're talking to yourself, are you in your emotional brain or are you in your logical brain? Because one more logical fact is that the biggest risk of death is cardiovascular disease. One in five women will die of cardiovascular disease. And I know we've said this multiple times, but that is much more likely to kill you many times over than a diagnosis of breast cancer. In fact, mortality of breast cancer is extraordinarily low when caught early, and hormone therapy reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease. So we add even more logic on top, as well as decrease the risk of bone loss, which, you know, one in two women will have an osteoporotic fracture in their life. So it's not also about just, you know, seeing like where you are in the spectrum of emotion to logic, but also then adding even more logic of even more benefits of hormone therapy, not to say you're doomed without it or everyone must take it, but to just kind of rewind a lot of those emotional knee-jerk reactions we have to hormone therapy.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. My mother died of breast cancer when she was 57. So talk about emotion. I hear 100% the woman. And I was one of those who were like, I am staying away from hormones. I'm afraid of it ever since she died. So I had to educate myself to really understand what are the risks. I had to have the discussion with my doctor. And it's really important. I always, when women are on the fence like me, and they're not really sure, I just say, you got to go and read up. You got to listen to podcasts, or you got to go follow Dr. Heather Hirsch. You got to understand, because I don't really want to recommend hormone therapy to someone who's really doubtful and rubbing this cream on her body, afraid that it's going to give her cancer. Like, that's just, to me, there's placebo effect. Who knows what's going on? And of course, the cancers we know started decades, can start decades before starting any treatment. So it's not, you know, we know that estrogen does not cause cancer.
But, you know, again, to that point, I really want to make this point that I have a lot of patients that I always still say to them, like, every year, I'm going to come and give you the pep talk about the safety. And they're like, okay, I just, you know, it's almost like, affirmations, you know, it's really good to hear it many, many times, because the emotional and the psychological impacts are not to be diminished by just the fact that there is logic. There is still room to experience the thoughts in your head and to let those be okay, not beat yourself up for them either. So I totally hear you on that.
I want to go back to the Lancet article, because we just started talking about it without really explaining what this is. And so the Lancet is a medical publication, and you described it well as like sort of the English version, you know, because this is where we get a lot of, I'm in Spain right now, so this is where Europeans may get a lot of their information. And there was this article called Time for a Balanced Conversation About Menopause. This came out March 5th, 2024, in case anybody's watching, listening to the replay in the next year. And you did a great podcast. I'm going to have the podcast linked into the show notes, because you just went full on with this, explaining exactly your thoughts about it. And I started reading it, and I just, even the title, Time for a Balanced Conversation, like, you ladies, just calm down. You know, you're just getting crazy about this whole menopause thing. And I want you to explain a little bit what you read in the article and a brief synopsis of what you think about it.
It's so hard to be brief, because on one hand, I think the proponent will say that there's too much discourse maybe about hormone therapy that's making women feel anxious that either now they're not on hormone therapy, like, has it gone too far? I can understand that argument. I actually do. Sometimes I have patients come to me that they say, we've trialed hormone therapy and maybe there's actually not so much that they're fearful, but there's some side effects. And they say, well, and now I'm worried I need to be on it. So I can certainly understand that actually. But what I feel like happened is in saying we need to have a balanced conversation, they weren't very balanced. They were also saying that there's been too much push on social media and that this feminist narrative is going to hurt the general population. They do make note that hormone therapy should be offered. So it's not so much a pro-hormone therapy or anti-hormone therapy. And I also do say the same thing. I talk about hormone therapy a lot on social media, mainly because we do feel that for decades, women haven't had the full story to make a decision. And so that's why I do talk about it so much. And so what I felt was so harsh was that they called this an over-medicalization, which I don't think that's the right word, because we've over-medicalized lots of things. And everyone, you know, is smart enough to say, well, we haven't over-medicalized erectile dysfunction. We haven't over-medicalized high cholesterol. We haven't over, you know, is so it seems a little slanted when they're trying to say, like, this conversation is getting slanted, but yet we have a slant as well, but we're going to publish this in The Lancet. So it's fact, but it does seem more like an opinion piece. And then the part that also is really so disheartening was that they said that this over-medicalization is disempowering. And that piece is so harsh and was received by a lot of clinicians across the world really negatively. Because even those patients that say, well, you know, I'm worried now that I'm missing out, I don't think any of them feel as though they've learned, quote, too much about their body or learned too much about hormone therapy. And so there were some pieces of it that for, you know, the clinicians and women who have been galvanized in the last couple of years to really learn about this, it seems like it really fell on deaf ears. So overall, and this is a very bird's eye view of it. I mean, it's 64 pages. And truthfully, with all of the good research and review articles that we really do have on menopause, it really seemed as though the main point they were trying to make hidden in these 64 pages was this narrative of HRT has gone a little too far and there's other options that are just as good, if not better. And that is therein lies really kind of the problem, is that there's an opinion hidden in there. I don't know that I made that very concise, but yes. You know, it's very, talk about emotional. Now we're going back to emotional. Talk about something that was really emotional for a lot of the, I'm sure, you know, I am a clinician. I'm also a woman going through perimenopause, but it was really hard to read for so many of the clinicians who have been advocating that women understand their bodies better, have better choices, know the real risks and benefit. It was just hard to read.
Yes, because when you say they put their emotions into it, because it seems like menopause is emotional and it's political. And we see this in the reels that I've been posting with women around the world. I call it menopause around the world. And we were just talking about this before we started recording. And it's fabulous to see a video go viral. You're like, wow, people are really watching it. But then when you get these comments, hundreds, thousands sometimes of comments of women fighting on their own decision just because she didn't have any symptoms. She thinks that if you just exercise, then you'll be fine because that's maybe what happened to her. And then you have the others are commenting and saying, no, my menopause, I have 20 hot flashes a day. It's not possible, especially if I share a woman who shares, I don't know, Thai woman who says, I didn't have any hot flash. I didn't feel anything. And then you get some very negative comments and you can see it's so emotional. So not only when the medical community, the doctors, but the women themselves. And we have to take a step back and say, we know, I mean, you know, as a clinician, doctor, that we have the spectrum of menopause is large. It's wide. You've seen women who have zero symptoms and then those who have every symptom in the book. And this is why I like your book. Your book, I just finished it. I'm so excited. That was a great book. Unlock Your Menopause. What was it? Unlock Your Menopause Type.
Unlock Your Menopause Vibe sounds like a better title, but as you were you're like, unlock your menopause vibe. Yeah,
type. Yes. And honestly, that book was really good because you did talk about hormones, but you talked about all the other things that we can and should be doing, whether you're on hormone therapy or not. And my mantra is always, we cannot out-hormone a bad diet and lifestyle. As pro-hormone as I am, and I love it, I think it's great, it's, you know, helped a lot of women, I still feel that it's not a panacea for everything. And that's what women are sort of feeling, especially in this biohacking phase, our this biohacking community. We're all looking for that biohacking, or some people call it anti-aging pill or fix. And yes, there's so many great things about hormone therapy, but I do believe we need to add all the other things, the tools that you've given in your book, which are so valuable, to add on top of it, or whether or not, because it, and then, like you said, I want to advocate for the woman who chooses not to do hormone therapy for whatever reason. And she's scared. She's like, oh my God, I totally missed out. And I don't know, I can't do it or whatever. And we need to give those person tools. There's so many things you can do to protect your bones, your brain, your heart, your vagina without the hormone therapy as well. Don't you think?
I know. Oh gosh. Yes. And I really do like my book. And the only reason I say that is because I'm a really heart critic of myself. But I love my book because it really does a good job of saying, look, in each type, I talk about how you could do each type with hormone therapy and then without hormone therapy. And the part three is all the things you can do at home. But you really hit on an important point here, which is that for whatever reason, both men and women always feel the need to comment on women's bodies and therefore women's choices. And whether it's, you know, how she's going to carry that baby or how she's going to deliver that baby or what she's going to do when the baby's born, are we going to breastfeed? Are we going to not? And then you see this carry through into menopause. Are you going to take HRT or not? This is the way. This isn't the way. This is how you should do it. This is how I did it. And when you think about it, would we do that to a man? Like, would we talk about like, well, you know, should you, I don't even know, because they just have such easier lives. You know, they're the universal truth is puberty and then they're done. But we don't have to feel the need, men or women, to really comment so much on what men do that, you know, it is a very historical and social thing to do is to have opinions about women's bodies, women's choices, right? We all know the big one, abortion. We're not talking about this in this podcast, but like therein lies, you know, we constantly feel that women's bodies are on display for all of us to decide what to do. And that's because we're pack animals. We want to stay together. We want to form some commonality. We want to find the person that wants to do the same thing as we do. And we're all pretty much focused on ourselves, let's be honest, at the end of the day. And there's just not one size that fits all. I absolutely agree with you that lifestyle is important. You cannot, you know, out hormone that. Got to make sure you're thinking about sleep and you're thinking about your movement. You're thinking about your diet. You're also enjoying your quality of life. So you're not punishing yourself. You know, I kind of don't know where this comes from. Well, sorry. No, I do know where this comes from, but I think I was trying to say, like, I don't know how to make it stop either. And then the last thing I'll say is that in my book, I talk about the silent menopause type. So it's interesting. Of course, you know, there's definitely this political spectrum or spectrum, if it's not even political, whatever it might be, of do all the things, do none of the things. But when you don't have symptoms, it's really easy to feel like you're going to breeze through it. But you might actually be in for a little bit of a surprise because you can't feel your bones change. You can't feel your blood vessels change. You can't feel your heart change. You can't feel those things. And the body is still going through major hormonal deprivation. The word deprivation always sounds harsh. Sounds like we're like, you're deprived of it. But like, that is the word. That is true. You are being deprived of the hormones that you've had for half of your life. And we used to probably live a few years after menopause. And now we're living, you know, again, 30, 40, 50 years postmenopausal at this point. Women should also be thinking, not as menopause as a siloed event, which is what the Lancet also got wrong, but about the long-term effects, how long we're living without hormones, and not just that hormone therapy can help reduce your symptoms, but what we touched on, you know, maybe 20 minutes ago was that actually hormone therapy can improve lots and lots and lots of modifiable diseases. It can reduce the risk of chronic modifiable diseases, diabetes, heart disease, osteoporosis. And so there's so much more to the story, makes it so hard to watch, you know, some women really kind of hiding in the comments. I get why it happened, and I'm not exactly sure how we can, you know, kumbaya it.
Well, we did a great podcast with Celine Yeager, and that's how I found you, actually.
Oh, that's amazing. I love all the work that she's doing and pioneering, and she's just kick ass.
She is. She's great. We've done several podcasts, and we discussed this. What do we do? Because she experiences the same thing in her community. And what we concluded, well, among other things, what I thought was really, you know, if we can learn how to do it, if you see these posts and they're triggering this emotion and it's okay to keep scrolling. Don't have to comment on every single thing. And that will maybe some save some of the discourse. And at least it gives us a little breather. You can even think about, why am I feeling emotional about this? Or why do I feel compelled? But maybe just stop that knee-jerk reaction of the comment. Sit back and think of it for a little bit. And it's okay to disagree. Just, you don't need to destroy people's lives to make a comment.
I think this is get curious, not furious.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Like, why are you feeling that way? Did someone kind of tell you, or have you been getting messages that, you know, you have to do this one way? What is making you curious?
This episode is sponsored by Oxford HealthSpan, the creators of my favorite supplement, Primadine. I admit it, I am a total supplement junkie, but if I had to choose only one, it would be this one. And it's because Primadine is spermidine, and this is shown to activate autophagy, which is super important. Now, this is a cellular cleanup and recycling process that declines as we age. So as we get older, our cells accumulate a lot of junk and waste, which isn't good for our cells, our health, nor our longevity. So we need to clean it up. And if you want the research on this, go to oxfordhealthspan.com and you can see all of it, showing how spermidine supports our brain, our hormones, and our heart health. And another great side effect is stronger hair, skin, and nails, but also longer eyelashes. But, you know, the real important reason why I love Primadine is because I have never, ever received as much feedback on a product I recommended as I have with Primadine. Literally every week, someone reaches out to me on Facebook or Instagram with an amazing testimonial. And most of the time, it's about improved sleep. And even some of you told me it's reversed a bit of your gray hair too. So I find that totally amazing. So I can honestly say with 100% certainty that Primadine is the best spermidine supplement you'll ever find. And you can try it with a 15% discount by using the code Zora, Z-O-R-A, on oxfordhealthspan.com. Just be sure to get back to me with your results too. Now enjoy the show.
The other thing, the thing that triggered me to contact you to interview you was your discussion on testing. That's one of my questions, because when you say that, yes, we're in a hormone-deprived state, this can really help us through a lot of the osteoporosis concern that we have and protecting our heart. When I did the training, the menopause method training with Dr. David Rosensweet of the Institute of Bioidentical Medicine, which was a fabulous training, we learned, actually, it's a training made for doctors, but they allowed me to take it. And I got to see, actually, how are they training doctors? And you have your own, actually, amazing program, which you're also training doctors. And so what he likes to do is, he says, great, we get a menopausal woman here. She's suffering. She's got her symptoms. We want to make her happy. We want her to sleep. We want her to have a nice, juicy vagina. We want her to have her libido back. So let's help her through that. But then he tests. And he says, because we want her to not only feel good, but I'm also concerned about her when she's 60, 70, 80. And I'm a gerontologist, and I loved hearing that, because it isn't only about let's feel good today, but I want to make sure that we're living longer, happier lives and in a healthy way as much as possible. And hormones can do that. And this is why he says, look, even if she's feeling good, I still want to test her to make sure she has enough. Because what he does is gone through the research and says, what's the minimum dosage to at least protect our heart and our brains and our everything else? I just want to make sure she's at least in that state and not going over what he would consider an overdose. Let's talk about your thoughts on testing, because he's got his own way of doing it. And there are doctors out there who say testing is a bunch of BS. It doesn't matter. Perimenopause, your hormones are fluctuating so much, useless. Where do you stand on this? And I can understand, both camps.
I actually think this is so interesting. I was going to say funny, but interesting, because it was Celine who actually first told me, like, this is pretty controversial that you're testing people. Because doesn't NAM say don't test? I'm like, okay, let's take a step back. We're looking at your estrogen level, maybe your testosterone level, you know, or maybe your FSH level. Like, we're really doing quite benign testing here. So I think that's why I think it's really kind of interesting that it's honestly even controversial, because the fact that it's controversial to do low-hanging, not harmful blood testing, again, I think it's making me think that we're gaslighting women by not giving them information about their own body. Is it, you know, ridiculously helpful? Not all the time, no. It needs to be taken in context, which is the other thing. And so I actually will tell you straight up, my opinion is that I think a huge reason that people say they don't want to test is for the reason that, one, it can be difficult to interpret. It has to be interpreted contextually. It sometimes is not actually immediately helpful. It's sometimes more helpful in a bird's eye view, or we don't exactly know why it's helpful. So it's just easier to say, don't do it. Just don't do it. I can figure it out. The other problem is that not a lot of doctors can figure it out. So, you know, I pride myself on the fact that during the pandemic, there was no labs open. I could do this without lab work, and I don't really need it. There's few instances where I actually really do. For example, if someone doesn't bleed, we talked about that way at the beginning of your show. She wants to know if she's menopausal. She needs an FSH level. It's going to be high, and an estrogen. It's going to be low. That's going to be very validating for her, right? There are reasons when we should get blood testing. But I can also reasonably clinically deduce without testing. But again, I've had a decade of experience, so I'm lucky for that. So I think that it's so paternalistic to say, no, you don't need that. Even if she says, okay, I know it needs to be interpreted in context, and I know that maybe this will be helpful 6 months down the road, or if we watch these levels over time, but I can get blood and that makes me feel validated. That makes me feel like I'm a part of this process. And when we're talking about getting a blood test for three things, which is mostly estrogen, testosterone, FSH, like, it can be so helpful for so many women. It can also help us determine if we are in the right range or if we're in the right ballpark. And my motto is always clinical before labs. We don't use labs to tell us what to do. We use what the patient says. So much of perimenopause and menopause management is very, very clinical. That's why there's not a ton, but a very experienced clinician is just so freaking, it's just gold, because they can really help guide you. So we use clinical first and then lab secondary as more data. And so, you know, it's just, it's empowering for a lot of women to track their labs. It helps them make sure they're in the right range. It helps them make sure they're not getting too little or too much. And I think that this whole, it's silly for this to be controversial, because if it is such, then again, that logic is just telling me we're trying to keep women small, not know what's going on with their bodies, when it's just basic information. So I think that's kind of the story here, is that it is a little fascinating, because again, while I say, yes, you know, let's do it, I have someone that say, I'm so busy, I don't like needles, do I need it? Oh, you don't need it either. Like, there's a lot of shared decision making going on here. So this shouldn't be controversial at all. This should just be, just like we check someone's A1C every once in a while to make sure we're on the right diabetes medications. That is pretty equivalent to what we're doing. We're not scanning her entire body for, you know, microscopic disease. But again, I think what makes it controversial is that sometimes, yes, it's actually not helpful. You really have to use that clinical brain to help you. So, you know, that's my hot take on that. And I hope I made sense in that. But, you know, I think, again, there's so much individualization that needs to happen, whether it's if you're going to take HRT or not, what lifestyle you're doing on top of that, what supplements you're doing on that, if you're getting lab work on top of that. And is it disempowering? I hope not. Although it can probably feel confusing. Each person, each woman is different, likes to look at her body different, likes to look at her data different. And that's kind of my jam. That makes life really interesting.
Thank you. It's the shared decision-making that I think is
totally in the shared decision.
It's got to be there, instead of just saying, you don't need this. And I remember you clearly said, how does it feel if you ask your doctor, imagine a patient, and here I am, the patient asks me, can I get testing? And you say, no. I mean, it's so disempowering. And I put yourself in this person's shoes, and you really put yourself in that person's shoes. I appreciate that, because that's where we're coming from. We're tested for everything else. Why wouldn't we test for hormones? Like, Come on. And then you feel, then there's, and on top of it, you have the scare. You haven't been informed yet about the safety of hormone therapy. So here you are scared. You're not even testing. And then you maybe want to go and just baby steps, and maybe you're not getting enough to alleviate your symptoms or protect, you know, all the other things that are protective with it. So I think it's really, I loved your answer. I really appreciated it. I think you're correct. And I also want to remind women that when we talk about testing, it's not only your estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. I mean, most these doctors that I know who are in this space who are concerned about your health, maybe look at insulin, may look at your cholesterol level, may look at your thyroid. Thyroid's a huge one when you're going through this menopause transition. So
I think it would be fascinating once we start even thinking, I mean, I see a lot of similarities, talk about biohacking with semaglutides and thinking about leptin and ghrelin and insulin, right? And right now we don't know how to measure those, but like I could foresee a world where someone's on a semaglutide and we're looking to see if her leptin and ghrelin levels are, is that the right long-term dose for you? There's no reason that couldn't happen. And that will turn into something controversial, but there's always, I think, danger in overchecking things too. I think maybe this comes from we don't want to overcheck. Clinicians don't want to take the time to interpret these labs for you because they're very hard to interpret if you're not in context. But you know, right, we're tested for so many things to then just say, oh no, sweetie, you don't need that. It's not helpful. You're like, huh? What? It actually could be quite, it's not the full story. And that's why if something gives women the sixth sense that doesn't sound right, there's probably something behind it.
Exactly. So then what are your thoughts on the dried urine tests or the 24-hour urine tests? Because those doctors were looking for metabolites. So they say, okay, once you're on your hormone therapy and you've stabilized, we want to see how you're converting your estrogen. And so in this community, we hear a lot about Dutch testing and these kinds of things, and that can be really expensive. So a woman can get more confused because you can't just do these yourselves. You need someone who's can interpret it because it's quite complex. And then you think, well, should I invest this money? But I want to see I'm going down the safe pathways of estrogen. And so we get scared because if you're already scared and you're just barely dipping your toes in and overcoming the fear of hormones, and then you hear this, you're like, well, why is my doctor test for that metabolite? So how important do you think it is to look at metabolites and those pathways?
I'm going to give you my biased answer, but my honest answer as well. I never have used these before. I, you know, was trained at the Cleveland Clinic, which who cares, but, you know, again, still pretty reputable. And I've been treating women for a decade and treating them quite successfully. And I've never used these before. And so I actually think that we're just personally can't say that I've ever felt as though like more testing beyond just serum levels is necessary or helpful. And I think potentially that's where it does get down the rabbit hole because one, they're not FDA approved and we don't really know what these means. And then you get things like, am I metabolizing them? Is this dirty? I mean, again, it's giving a verb to, you know, something that doesn't need it, right? What the heck is a dirty estrogen? I honestly don't know, but the term itself just sounds cringy to me. And really not cringy just because, again, I think there we're reinforcing that that's where we're making more to do of something that we need to. They're expensive, they're costly, and you're already doing enough work, right? Women already have enough to do. You know, they're taking care of their families, their houses, their spouses, their pets, they're exercising, they're thinking about their longevity. If you're on hormone therapy, you're on FDA-approved hormone therapy, you're on a good dose, your serum level is good, girl, you're good. You don't need to keep going down the rabbit hole. Give yourself permission to feel safe, confident, and happy about it. And I don't think that those are necessary.
Okay, that's interesting. So if this is always a big confusion. So if it's not necessary, then why are we getting the, you know, they label this the you know, the safe pathways and it's the 2OH and the 4OH and the 16OH pathways. And there's this big graph. I'm sure you've seen it. It's like a pie chart. And doctors then will try to move the needle into the safer pathways by giving us some supplements like glutathione or indole-3-carbinol and, you know, these things I think are pretty safe and all that. But there are some doctors who would say, you know what, skip the Dutch testing. If you think you're in that bad pathway, just take the glutathione. It's good for you anyways. And again, if you're okay with that, that's fine. But it is confusing. And that's why I asked you if you you're not concerned about the metabolites. You think it's because some people say it's just a marketing thing and we don't have to worry. Others say, no, there's plenty of research behind it.
Again, I'll just kind of say I don't use them and I don't feel as though that's been any disservice to any of my patients, meaning they have been living well and happy into their 80s and 90s on their hormone therapy, living wonderful, happy lives without kind of digging farther into what's happening. And we don't do this to, why wouldn't we do this to premenopausal women or perimenopausal women when they're making their own estrogen? It doesn't make any sense. And I think then you're just going to instill this constant like idea in women that like, we're not doing enough. We're still not doing it right. We're still not doing it perfectly. And I think that that's probably wherein lies my level of we're overdoing it now. I believe that this industry grew out of the fact that clinicians just stopped giving a fuck about menopause and perimenopause. And so they didn't check levels. So then these third-party companies were like, ah, well, here's a beautiful opportunity. Let's do Dutch testing. The reason Dutch people get Dutch tests is because they go to their primary care doctor who they've seen for years, and their doctor says, no, you don't need lab. So they're like, okay, I'll go online. Oh, I'll send off for this Dutch test. They get these results back. They have no idea what it means, and it scares them further. So, you know, if we just educate clinicians on, you know, how they can interpret these, how they can help counsel women, whether it's the safety of an estrogen patch or estrogen gel or, you know, progesterone, prometrium, vaginal estrogen, like, I don't think we need to go so far down that path. Now, if you're like super, super, super into health, wellness, longevity space, okay. But I don't think necessarily that like the average woman needs to go that far. If we have a medical system that adequately treats and cares and understands about perimenopause and menopause, which we don't have yet,
In not only in the US, but elsewhere around the world. I have yet to find it, but I have so many questions. I want to continue this conversation, but I have to let you go.
I know. I've loved this conversation so much. Like I love podcasting. Not only do I get to meet amazing women and be introduced to your amazing audience, but I get to really learn more about you and leave me with a lot of things to think about, right? Like where are some of the things that I, you know, need to investigate more, learn more, think about. Like I have to get curious, not furious sometimes.
Well, I love what you're doing. Everyone's got to follow you now if you haven't heard already. It may probably half the audience is already following you, but you've got a great podcast. I'll have the link into the show notes called Health by Heather Hirsch. And then your book, Unlock Your Menopause Type, that was so cool. I love that. And everybody can sort of see themselves in that and give so many great other tips. I mean, really get yourself educated with the hormone therapy. And then what else can you add on to it or do if you're not taking hormone therapy? So love that book. Get it now. And they can find you on your website, heatherhirschmd.com. I'm going to have links to your Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. You're smashing it on social media. I love watching your videos. I can't wait for always for the next one to come out. I learned so much from you. And we still have a lot to talk about, especially those pellets the next time.
Well, I would love the opportunity to come back. And I really thank you too so much for one, all your kind words and, you know, being part of the, you know, this time, this movement, this excitement, bringing in a lot of fresh perspectives. Like, it's so exciting to be able to partner and do this together. I really think this is, you know, it takes a whole village and it's the feeling is so mutual.
Oh, I love it. Well, before I let you go, do you have any last words for a woman going through menopause?
Hold on. Oh my goodness. You're going to give me a tough one right at the end. Edit out my thinking. Listen to your body. That is going to be your North Star. Just as we've said throughout this episode, there are women who take hormone therapy, and when they do, we listen to their body. Sometimes that means we have to use a different type of progesterone or a different route of estrogen, but we have to listen to your body. If you are making a decision or you're trying a new medication or you're trying a new exercise or cold plunge and you feel like everyone's doing it, but it's not working for you, listen to your body. That would be my best advice.
Perfect advice, especially this community of biohackers. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. Keep doing what you're doing. And I'm so excited to have you on for a part two, and we can just keep the conversation going. Bye-bye. Today's episode is sponsored by the Institute of Bioidentical Medicine, which is the authority when it comes to understanding bioidentical hormones. And I just completed their menopause method course, and I am mega impressed. This is a self-paced course designed by Dr. David Rosensweet, who's been treating women through menopause for nearly 3 decades. And I can highly recommend this program, particularly if you're a doctor or someone who is actually prescribing hormones to women for menopause. So make an appointment at iobim.org to see if you're a candidate for the menopause program and ask for a discount with the code ZORA, Z-O-R-A. You're going to learn so much with this program because menopause is inevitable, but suffering is optional.
You can now watch all of our podcast interviews on the Hack My Age YouTube channel. Some of our guests bring slideshows, so it's really great to have. Every week, there is a new video, so just search Hack My Age on YouTube.com or find the link on the Hack My Age website. Hey, did you enjoy the podcast? Don't forget to subscribe to be notified of all the new episodes and leave a review to help build the tribe. It's a small act of kindness that brings me big benefits and helps others find this amazing content. The best thing you can do is share. Sharing is caring. Statements made on this podcast have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Anything we say or products we mention are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Information provided by this podcast is not a substitute for personal medical advice and not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It is intended as a sharing of knowledge and information from the personal research and experience of me and my guests.